know, TNA is for real. It's going to get more real as we move along here in the next few weeks. We're not going to be like wrestling used to be, with a bunch of fake-ass wrestlers and a bunch of fake storylines. We're going to start shooting. This is about drawing money. And if you don't draw money, you don't belong here. You're going to blow the roof off this place. We're going to do a TNA, which should have been done all along. We're going to make it interesting. We're going to make it real interesting.
What you heard there was a Hulk Hogan TNA promo that completely encapsulates everything that is wrong with TNA these days. Just unbelievably sad. In fact, even more sad, I think, than Bambi's mother being shot is in that promo right there. What you heard right there really is Hulk Hogan continuing to flush his legacy straight down the toilet bowl. We'll get to Hulk's promo in just a second. This is episode 173 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off on SCScoops.com. It is Sunday, August 14th, 2011, SummerSlam Sunday, in fact. I am the Solid Monster. For those of you who may have missed it, I recorded a special weekday, a rare weekday edition of the podcast on Wednesday, episode 172. So if you missed it, or if you were not a subscriber to iTunes and it didn't get delivered to you automatically, perhaps you overlooked it, go back and listen to that show first before you listen to this one. I talked about SummerSlam, gave a quick preview of the show, some predictions and thoughts on that. Raw from last week, among other things. So check out 172 if you have not already done so. Just to give a quick SummerSlam update here, I'm not going to go through all the predictions again, but I will just give a quick rundown of the card since we have one extra match now that has officially been announced. Yes, in fact, they have announced a fifth match. Stop the presses. They have five matches now instead of four announced for one of their biggest pay-per-views of the year. WWE Championship match, obviously CM Punk, the champion, against John Cena, the champion, to crown an undisputed WWE champion. Triple H will be the guest referee in that match. Randy Orton challenges Christian for the World Heavyweight Championship in a no-holds-barred match. Christian has promised, seemingly, has promised something special, some surprise of some sorts in this match. I don't know what that could be. I guess we'll find out. Actually, you know, I was actually thinking about this, and would not shock me at all if Christian did have some sort of surprise in the form of a person, if perhaps they were going to put Brodus Clay with Christian, maybe as some sort of a heavy or a bodyguard for him. He was really good in that role with Alberto Del Rio, and then they got split up. Del Rio got sent to Raw, Brodus Clay stayed on SmackDown, then he was filming a role in a movie, which he recently completed. Just a thought that popped in my head. I have no reason to believe that this will actually happen, but I could see Brodus Clay actually doing pretty well in that role as a bodyguard of sorts for Christian. Kelly Kelly defends the Divas Championship against Beth Phoenix. Sheamus goes one-on-one with Mark Henry. Sheamus, who was awesome on Conan O'Brien the other night. And the fifth and final match announced, although this will not be the final match on the pay-per-view, they'll be adding at least one or two more during the actual show, which always is a great idea. Daniel Bryan will go one-on-one with Wade Barrett. They've been feuding over the last couple of weeks. Should be a good match. Battle, I think I talked about this on 172. Two men who came up in the Nexus together, the original Nexus, 1 year ago. And get to go one-on-one now for the first time in the first big match I think they've really had, certainly on pay-per-view. And we know what Daniel Bryan is capable of. Wade Barrett is a more than capable performer. I think Punk and John Cena will have another great match tonight, but this is the match that I think you should look for. If they give it a little bit of time, you could have a pretty good match tonight on the pay-per-view. So if you want predictions, again, go back and listen to 172. I went into some pretty great detail about SummerSlam, but I think the long and short of it is that CM Punk, in my opinion, does not walk out tonight with the WWE Championship. I'm not saying John Cena does either. I could see some sort of screwy finish that perhaps results in the title being vacant, and then they do something with it at Night of Champions. Maybe nothing really changes and both guys end up leaving with the belt. I just find it hard to believe that Punk leaves with the championship. He absolutely should, but I don't know that that's the direction they're going to be going in. So I just went out on a limb. I don't exactly know what they have in mind for a finish. I think I mentioned on the last show that they've done a pretty good job of making you think there's this big beef between Triple H and Punk to the point where Triple H is going to outright screw CM Punk. I don't see that happening. I think that's a little too predictable. I think Triple H will call the match right down the middle for the most part. Something will happen at the end, maybe an accidental bump, and one thing will lead to another, and look, if you're watching the pay-per-view tonight expecting a clean, great 35-minute match like we got at Money in the Bank, I don't know that you should have your expectations set too high. From what I understand, they're going to get some time for this match. I don't know if they'll get half an hour like they did last month. But with Triple H in the mix, not going to be a clean finish. As far as the world title match, I think if I remember correctly, as much as I want to say Randy Orton is going to win because my gut tells me that Randy Orton's going to win, my heart wants Christian to at least have one more month with the championship. I see Christian leaving with the title. I think they can keep it on him for another month until Night of Champions. Sheamus and Mark Henry, a little bit tougher to call. I think I called it a no DQ or some sort of draw finish, an inconclusive finish. Sheamus is seemingly getting some steam again, now as a babyface, getting a big push. Mark Henry, of course, has been pushed to the moon over the last couple of months. I assume this ends with a world title shot, perhaps against Randy Orton if he gets the belt back and then Orton beats him. I don't see Mark Henry necessarily winning the championship, although I wouldn't be against the Mark Henry run with the title, maybe for a few months. But the point is, if they're building Mark Henry up even more, and they've built him up very, very strongly, not that one loss to Sheamus is going to kill him, but in their eyes, you can't have a guy like Mark Henry lose. So if Mark Henry isn't going to lose and Sheamus is getting a push, it wouldn't make sense for him to lose. It's the first match between the two of them. You could do a rematch at the next pay-per-view, maybe with some sort of stipulation. I don't know that we're going to get a decisive finish in this match. And then as far as the Divas title is concerned, Beth Phoenix all the way. Any other outcome in this match is the wrong outcome. Beth Phoenix deserves to... she deserves a run with the championship, maybe try to bring some credibility back to that butterfly belt. But we'll see. Daniel Bryan and Wade Barrett, I haven't been following, I'll admit, their feud as closely as some other people have on SmackDown. I know Bryan's lost a couple of matches of late, or he did this past week, I believe. You know, I got to go with Daniel Bryan in this match. He's got the Money in the Bank briefcase, so he's got a little bit of momentum going forward. I'll go with Daniel Bryan. As far as other matches that could end up on the card, R-Truth does not have a match. John Morrison does not have a match. The Miz, believe it or not, in L.A. at SummerSlam, a show that's been built around him in the advertising. He's been doing all the different media stops. The Miz has no match at the pay-per-view. And, you know, Rey Mysterio and The Miz, certainly it would make sense to put them in the ring together. The big question is Mysterio's knee. But, of course, Mysterio is supposed to get a title match on Raw tomorrow night against whoever comes out of the pay-per-view as champion. So I don't know what the situation is, quite frankly, with Mysterio's knee. He was supposed to have an MRI on Monday. I have not read anything as far as any conclusive results from that test. That's neither good nor bad. We just don't know anything at this point. But I find it odd that all of these guys, forget Mysterio's injury for a second. You've got Rey, you've got Miz, you've got Truth, you've got Morrison. And I'm sure there's other people I'm forgetting. Dolph Ziggler, Alex Riley. All these people that have been on television of late. Dolph Ziggler's the U.S. champion, for crying out loud. Cody Rhodes, the new Intercontinental champion. I could see them putting him and Ezekiel Jackson, perhaps, on the pay-per-view tonight at the last minute. You know, Big Zeke gets his rematch, because God knows everybody has to get their rematch. I could definitely see them putting that match on as a last-minute addition to the show. All of these people, though, going into your arguably your third biggest pay-per-view of the year, have no match. And as I talked about on the last show, to give away Truth and Morrison and to give away, you know, Dolph and Riley, even if you're going to match them up again possibly tonight, why give the match away for free the week before the pay-per-view on Raw? It just doesn't make any sense. Their booking this past week has me confounded. I don't understand that at all. But as far as this championship match is considered, you know, on Raw they were calling it the most important or the biggest championship match in WWE history. Why? What makes this the most important championship match in history? Because you have two titles that don't mean anything that they're trying to unify? As if a unification means anything when you have another World Heavyweight title. So, whereas last month when a lot of us knew that there was something going on with Punk, we thought he might actually be leaving. Of course, nobody in their right mind could have believed that he would, you know, leave with the championship. But the thought that they would actually do something like that was kind of cool. And when they actually follow through on it, at least the first week, Punk took the title home with him. He showed up at Comic-Con. They were going in a pretty good direction with this, and then they just rushed everything. I mean, they just took a couple of months' worth of stuff, and they just rushed it all into a matter of 2 weeks. Now it just feels like another wrestling angle. You know, you've got Triple H, the fake COO of the company. throwing his weight around. He's the referee, which automatically tells you there's going to be some sort of fuck finish of some kind, if there's a decisive finish at all. And that's fine. I mean, they may have a hell of a match tonight. I'm looking forward to seeing how it shakes out, and I'm curious to see what they have in mind for a finish, but it just feels like another wrestling match, whereas a month ago, this felt like something really big. You know, it felt like WrestleMania. It felt like this whole situation felt a lot more real than it does now, and now it just is another angle. And if you had something like that last month and the pay-per-view did good but not great, how do you expect SummerSlam to do when you only had four matches announced up until a couple of days ago in a main event that, quite frankly, not nearly as many people care about as they did a month ago? You know, to me, that just doesn't bode well. The fact that I've had a boatload of people, some posted on Facebook, but you'd be amazed at how many emails I got in just the last two or three days from people desperate for links to streaming sites, because this month they have no interest in ordering the pay-per-view, whereas last month I got messages and Facebook posts and Twitter posts from people who said, man, I can't wait to buy SummerSlam. It's the first pay-per-view I'm buying in a year, or in some cases a couple of years. You know, people were genuinely excited to give their $45 or $50 or whatever it is to order Money in the Bank, and I'm just not feeling it this time. I'm really not feeling it, but if you're one of the people ordering SummerSlam, enjoy the show. Send in your feedback. Let me know. I'm sure there's going to be a huge discrepancy of opinion when the show is over from people who either loved what they did or hated what they did. But either way, should be an interesting show. Let's talk about Hulk Hogan. This was a good week for the Hulkster, you would think, right? The Hulkster celebrated his 58th birthday back on, I guess, Thursday, the 11th. Was his birthday. His daughter, Brooke, appeared nude, or I guess semi-nude, in a PETA campaign, and there was a lot of talk about that and the fact that, ooh, it's a little awkward that Hulk is there at the unveiling and his daughter is practically naked in this picture, and everybody made such a big deal about it, and it really wasn't a big deal at all. And Warrior came out several days ago with another rant against Hulk Hogan, another fucking lunatic in the Ultimate Warrior. Very educated, very articulate person. You know, I want to like Warrior so badly. Some of the videos he's done, he seems like he can be a very down-to-earth guy. And then every now and then he'll post a video that just makes us all remember the goddamn lunatic that he really is. Deep down inside, the guy ain't all there. And he came out with another rant against Hogan, and I don't even remember. I don't have it transcribed in front of me, but at the end he made a crack about Brooke, and he brought his family into it. And look, say what you want to about Hulk Hogan, and I will in just a second. There's no reason to bring his daughter into it. You can insult Hulk Hogan very easily. You can have all the ammunition you need. Believe me, a lot can be said about Hulk Hogan, especially the way he's been acting of late. You don't need to bring family into it. That's just ridiculous. That's just stupid, lazy bullshit. So that's my take on the whole Warrior thing for the people who asked about it. But I got a few things to talk about here as far as Hulk Hogan and this seemingly in-character promo he cut on YouTube. He basically was sitting, I guess, in his house. And God bless Hulk Hogan, but the iPhone might have been the worst invention for this guy's career. Seriously, I think Steve Jobs indirectly has done more to ruin Hulk Hogan's legacy than any other person on planet Earth, other than perhaps Hogan himself. Because ever since Hogan got his hands on what I believe is an iPhone, maybe it's a droid, but I'm pretty sure Hogan's got an iPhone. Remember the videos in the hospital when he was all doped up on medication? He had like 8 back surgeries, one after the other after the other. And he thought it would be a good idea to post all of these videos laying down in a hospital bed, doped up on pain medication like you wouldn't believe, or what I presume was pain medication. God knows what it was. Looking so sad, so crippled, so pathetic, barely intelligible. You couldn't even understand what the guy was saying half the time. I cannot believe that somebody as media savvy as Hulk Hogan has been throughout his entire career was stupid enough to post videos like that on YouTube. It's one thing to post a video of, oh, look at the scars on my back, brother, and all that. That's fine. But those videos were embarrassing. Unfortunately, the videos only got more embarrassing as Hulk Hogan became more video savvy. He's posted some really stupid stuff. This video might be the topper of all toppers. And I could see where some people would watch it and go, eh, what's the big deal? He's just cutting a promo. There is so much wrong with this promo that I cannot even begin to put it into words. Now, you knew something like this was probably going to happen. I mean, WWE struck gold with the CM Punk storyline. It wasn't something they planned. The Punk storyline essentially fell into their lap because Punk's contract really was expiring. At one point, he really was planning on taking time off, perhaps quite a long time, in fact, and just leaving WWE and leaving the business. And one thing led to another. Punk, of course, did not leave, but what they ended up getting out of it was this amazing storyline that, as I just talked about, felt real. It touched a nerve in a lot of people that I haven't seen in a long time. It felt like WWE for the first time in a long time. It wasn't about PG. It was about feeling emotion. It was about something that you can truly believe and get behind. And so you knew it was only a matter of time before TNA, Hogan, Bischoff, Russo, Dixie, somebody was going to have the idea to essentially try to piggyback on what WWE was doing. And let's do something real. Let's have somebody go out and cut a shoot promo, or let's do something that we want to shock the audience and make them think that it's real, even if it's not. And in a way, you know, if you could do it the right way, hey, God bless you. If TNA came up with a great idea, even if it was so blatantly obvious they were trying to copy off WWE's momentum, you know what? I could excuse it if they came up with a really good idea. Instead, what we get is this promo. So Hulk Hogan is sitting in front of a camera, or his phone, or whatever. And basically, the key points from this minute-plus-long video is that there's a final warning that Hogan issues to TNA. He claims that things are going to get more real, he says. He says there's going to be no more fake-ass wrestlers, fake storylines. We're going to start shooting, brother. That's what he said. No more fake-ass wrestlers or fake storylines. Now, when Hogan made the comment many, many months ago, I believe it was during one of TNA's reaction episodes when that show was still on the air. It was actually a pretty good show. And they tried to make it real and gritty, and it was shot like documentary style behind the scenes. And Hogan, I'm pretty sure it was on that show, that he made the comment about, I think he mentioned the Dudleys, you know, Team 3D, and it doesn't matter how many fake wrestling belts they won. It was something to that effect. And that pissed a lot of people off. It actually pissed, apparently it pissed a lot of wrestlers backstage in TNA off as well. Everybody knows wrestling is what it is. Of course, at the end of the day, a championship belt, you're booked to win the title. It's not like the Stanley Cup. It's not like the World Series. It's not what you would call a legitimate sports championship. Wrestling is not legitimate sport. It is sport, but it's also entertainment. Everybody knows wrestling is what it is. We don't need to go through the whole thing. Wrestling is predetermined. Outcomes are determined not by actual competition. They're determined by a guy backstage who half the time doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. But for Hogan, who built an entire career off winning fake-ass wrestling belts, to make that sort of comment on television, when you're supposed to make your championship feel special, when your championship is supposed to be the most important thing in the world, otherwise, what are guys on the roster really fighting for? And there's Hulk Hogan on television talking about how fake-ass wrestling belts don't mean nothing. And if you don't draw money, you don't belong here. Brother, 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 brother. Anyway, that pissed a lot of people off at the time. And these comments reminded me of that a lot. He's talking about fake-ass wrestlers and fake storylines. Hulk Hogan is in the middle of one of the biggest, most unrealistic, unbelievable, fake wrestling bullshit storylines that I've ever seen. All of this bullshit with the Immortal and the network, and, you know, one week Mick Foley is the head of the network, and then 2 weeks later, because he has a falling out with the company, all of a sudden, oh, you know, Spike is fine with putting Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff back in charge. And then a couple of weeks later, now you got Sting on television talking about how, you know, the network is unhappy with the job they're doing, when I thought a couple of weeks earlier the network was very happy with the job they were doing. And Sting claims, well, I'm the network rep. And then later on he says, well, I just lied, I'm not really the network rep. Who gives a fuck? I mean, TNA does these stupid storylines, and they change. They change so many times. They lose track of what they're doing themselves. They don't even know what they're doing half the time. Hulk Hogan is in the middle of all of this. I don't know 1 week whether to think Hogan is supposed to be a heel or a babyface. He goes back and forth, seemingly, in the way he behaves so many times. I mean, I know he's supposed to be a heel. Obviously, this is building to another babyface turn with him eventually. Everything Hogan does in TNA is a fake-ass wrestling storyline. There is not a goddamn thing that Hulk Hogan does in TNA that I would consider to be real. Hulk Hogan has been a cartoon character ever since Hulkamania took off, and that's fine. It's worked very well for him. But for him, all of a sudden, him of all people, if TNA is going to put somebody in this role, Hulk Hogan is not the guy. If you're going to put somebody out there who wants to, quote, be the face of the Shooters, brother, and we're going to make things real, no more of these old guys and these fake-ass wrestlers, Hulk Hogan, 58-year-old Hulk Hogan, is not the person who belongs in this role. Then he makes an even better comment in this video. He talks about how it's all about drawing money. And if you don't draw money, then you don't belong here, brother, brother, brother. If you don't draw money, you don't belong here? Tell me something. When was the last dime that Hulk Hogan drew for TNA Wrestling? Hulk Hogan made Vince McMahon a millionaire. Or certainly an even bigger millionaire than he would have been. Hulk Hogan made Ted Turner and Eric Bischoff a shitload of money in WCW. He was the face of Bischoff's NWO concept. And he added years onto his career thanks in part to that storyline. Again, a, quote, fake-ass wrestling storyline. Helped Hulk Hogan extend the life of his career in the mid-90s. He made a lot of money for a lot of people back in the day. Provide me with one shred of evidence that Hulk Hogan has meant anything to TNA. Anything positive. How much money has Hulk Hogan made Dixie Carter in TNA? Don't give me any bullshit about behind the scenes. Oh, Hogan's been very influential in terms of overseas deals. Really? That's news to me. I find it hard to believe that TNA would be in a worse position if Hogan never came in. If anything, they are in a worse position because of all the money they have to pay him. And I'm sure Spike is kicking in part of it or a lot of it. But it goes for him and Bischoff and Flair and all of them, the whole package. How much money do you think they're shelling out for these guys? How much has any one of them meant to TNA? Are you really honestly telling me that Hulk Hogan has meant more to TNA than AJ Styles would have if they would push him the right way, than Samoa Joe would if they pushed him the right way? You cannot convince me of that because it's not true. So for Hulk Hogan in 2011... to sit there and talk about if you don't draw money, you don't belong here. Does he not understand the irony of that statement? I mean, if this were 1996 or 1986, absolutely, there's no one bigger than Hulk Hogan at that point. No one. Maybe Austin at his peak, but Austin's peak was so brief. You know, the window that Austin was the biggest star in the business was so small. When you take everything in totality, Hogan, if he wants to make the argument that he's the biggest star of all time, he can do that. And I would even support that statement, quite frankly. But to see, I mean, it's so sad to see him sitting there. And yes, I mean, maybe, he's cutting a promo in this video. But who cares? Even if this is not meant to be taken at face value. This is TNA's big storyline. This is what they're banking their future on. This is what they think people are going to get behind. Every single person that saw that video, when I posted the video on my Facebook page, there wasn't a single comment in favor of this video. There wasn't a single person who came to Hogan's defense to say, you know what? You guys are being too hard on the guy. Let's see where it goes. Or I'm excited about this storyline. Or yeah, everything he said is true. Not a single person. Every person who responded had the same reaction that I did. This is sad. This is pathetic. He's doing nothing. Nothing but tarnish his legacy every time he opens his mouth with some stupid bullshit video like this. It is sad. It is so sad to see this. And then he goes on, he talks about the fact that we're going to do with TNA what should have been done all along. We're going to make things interesting. Really, Hogan came in January of 2010. So let's see, we're almost on the cusp of 2 years. We're not that far off from a full 2 years that Hogan, now and Bischoff, because, of course, one doesn't go without the other, have been with TNA. And as I said before, Bischoff apparently has had some good ideas in terms of production values, you know, reaction, which I said before was a good concept. I liked the show. It's a shame it's not on the air anymore. That was Bischoff. I give him a lot of credit for that. On the whole, in terms of creative, in terms of what you and I see on television, what has Bischoff and Hogan really meant for TNA? Nothing good. Nothing that I can see. But it's good to see that all of a sudden they got their heads out of their ass. And they're going to be doing what they should have been doing all along, they're going to make TNA interesting. 2 years after the fact, they're going to make it interesting. Good to know. Good to know. Then we have the evil laugh, which, of course, cheesy as fuck. To see Hogan sitting there like he's some sort of, villain, evil villain petting his pussycat, with the evil maniacal laugh. Then he immediately lapses back into character. Now, mind you, he's supposed to be convincing us that this is real, right? We're going to be shooting. No more fake wrestling stuff. So what does he do? He then lapses back into his fake wrestling character to talk about the fake storyline that Dixie Carter is no longer in charge, and he's feuding with Dixie Carter, who, of course, is still in power in TNA. And then he says, we're going to go full-blown evil on your ass. And then we get the evil laugh again. If I made a list of the top 5 or the top 10 things that I think are wrong with TNA, it would be hard, number one, to confine it to one list. This would be way up there. This is hardly the only thing, or even maybe the number one thing. If it's not number one, it's number two. And it's not just about Hogan. It's about this whole mentality. Whether Hogan did this on his own, or if this is part of a storyline that the company has mapped out, and so he went and did the video, I don't know. Wouldn't shock me if Hogan just went and did it on his own, and maybe not everybody behind the scenes is happy about it, but he went out there and he did it. It's done. It's out there. People have seen it. If they haven't already, they will. All the talent that company has, think of the talent they've gotten rid of. Jay Lethal, who now is the Ring of Honor television champion. Sorry for the spoiler, but Ring of Honor just had their first TV tapings this past weekend. It'll air later in September on a Sinclair station near you. Jay Lethal signed with ROH. He's the new TV champion. Good for him. Why did TNA let him go? Amazing Red, one of the more talented performers in the company. Small guy, sure. Very impressive in the ring. Could have made some money with him. You could have done a lot more with him than what you did. They had that Sangriento character. I don't know why they decided to put him under a different name, but whatever. And then they dropped that after a couple of weeks. So he left the company because he was told creative had nothing for him. Creative had nothing for the Amazing Red. Creative had nothing for Jay Lethal. But here's Hulk Hogan sitting in his house or psych ward or wherever he is, talking about how no more fake-ass wrestlers, brother. If you don't make money, get the hell out of here. We're going to be shooting, brother, brother, brother. Everything that's wrong with TNA encapsulated in that one singular minute 14-second long clip right there. And I am almost positive that we're going to have more videos like that in the future. So in 10 years from now, when we're talking about the death and the demise of TNA or Impact Wrestling or whatever the fuck they want to be called this week, we can look back on videos like this, just like we look back on old WCW videos, quite frankly, from 2000, 2001, before they went under. And you look at those matches and those shoot promos and all the bullshit on Nitro and Thunder, and it just makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up. That's going to be TNA for all of us in 10 years, unless they get their act together. Start getting rid of some of the people who really don't belong there anymore. Don't get rid of the people that actually have talent. Get rid of the people who don't deserve to be there anymore. Shape up, get your act together, and start pushing people who actually can make you some money, because clearly Hulk Hogan's money-making days, unless Vince McMahon is pulling the strings for one more WrestleMania match, those days are over. Somebody needs to let Dixie Carter know that. Some other quick news bits here. This one won't make very many people happy. I'm sure a lot of people listening to the show at least won't be happy to hear this. Linda McMahon apparently is sending very strong signals that she will indeed run for Joe Lieberman's open Senate seat. He is retiring in 2012, and she is interested in running a second time for office. She may run to take his seat, according to a story in the Greenwich Time. Multiple people familiar with McMahon's plan say that the Greenwich resident and former WWE CEO has already hired a campaign manager and is burning up the telephone lines trying to cultivate support for her candidacy within the Republican ranks. Party insiders say that Linda has tapped Corey Bliss, a Republican strategist who has worked on several high-profile races in Virginia and Vermont, to run her campaign. When the newspaper contacted Bliss during the week, saying that it had heard he would be working for McMahon, he didn't deny it. He said, yes, I am. Of course, later on, he tried to backtrack a little bit, but you can't do that. Once you say yes, you can't go back and say, well, I didn't mean that. So anyway, it's not confirmed, but it looks like she's going to run again. What this means for WWE, to me, it won't mean much. It's not going to change things that much, but if they've let the reins go a little bit in the last couple of months, they've started to push the envelope a little bit more, go back in that direction just a little bit. Once she makes it official, they're just going to pull back the reins a little bit, like just like they did when she ran the first time, because they're going to be so overprotective of things. They're going to want to be very careful on the grounds in which they tread. They don't want to make any mistakes. They don't want to put anything out there on television that, a campaign opponent can pounce on and use as ammunition against her. And I suppose that's a bad thing for all of us. If anybody's really been enjoying WWE television a little bit more the last 2 months or so, all the CM Punk stuff and more people seemingly using, I won't say foul language. It's not like people are on TV saying asshole like Steve Austin used to do, or The Rock. But there's been some more coarse language, I think, on Raw, at least, maybe not SmackDown. No more of that. If Linda McMahon makes it official and does run for Senate, we're going to see less of that. And if anybody disliked that before, you're probably not going to like it when it happens again. And does she have a better chance to win? I mean, look, it's too early to tell. She ran once. More people know about her now. She may have more respect. It's not like she performed really, really, really poorly the first time. She got beat fair and square. If she doesn't have strong opposition, she could very well win. And if she wins, then that would probably be even worse than if she's just running for office. Because if she actually wins, then there's no telling what impact that might have creatively on the company. She may not be the CEO anymore, but it's not like she doesn't have any ties to the company. It's still her husband's company. It's a company that she used to work for most of her life, and or at least for a big part of her life. And I guess we'll see how it shakes out. The announcement hasn't been made yet, but when it is, obviously, we'll talk more about it. Perhaps we'll have another one of those Vince McMahon segments where he is he's in a coma and he has a dream and, he has campaign stickers tattooed on his ass. And, yeah, wasn't that entertaining? And here's a story I love. I saw this posted on SE Scoops a couple of days ago, and I couldn't help but laugh. Laugh and cry all at once. WWE has seemingly come into the 21st century. This is not a new technology. This has been offered at other sporting events, apparently, and they're getting on the bandwagon. They're going to be offering live commentary. Obviously, when you're at a live show, if you're at a pay-per-view, one of the things you don't have access to are the announcers, because you're not at home watching on pay-per-view. So if you used to have Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler doing the announcing, one of the drawbacks would be you'd go to the pay-per-view, and you wouldn't be able to listen to the announcers. And sometimes the announcing can actually make a show better. In 2011, not the case. But it seems like we're actually going to be able now to get commentary at the events. So the WWE Live Commentary Radio will allow fans in attendance to listen to the SummerSlam broadcast. That's tonight, featuring the likes of Jerry Lawler, Jim Ross, Michael Cole, Booker T, and Josh Matthews. The live commentary radio will be available at merchandise stands on the concourse for $15 each. The radios are yours to keep and can be used as a traditional FM radio once the event has ended, and they can be used at future live events where WWE commentary radio is available. So the concept is really cool. Here's the problem, though. Announcing in 2011 WWE sucks. I mean, it may be the worst that it's ever been, in large part because of Michael Cole, although Booker T is also... I know some people like Booker T, but let's be honest, he also is pretty terrible. Maybe he'll get better. At least with him, he's still relatively new at it. He's been doing it for, what, 6-7 months, maybe? Michael Cole, there's no excuse. I mean, Michael Cole has... I mean, he's been a broadcast journalist. Cole has been working for WWE since 1997. He's been doing consistent commentary since the early days of SmackDown in 1999. And he's, look, when he's on his A game, when he's not playing the stupid character and being really overly obnoxious, Cole can be pretty good. But Cole is not great. Cole is not up there with the all-time greats. And the problem is he does do that stupid character. He is over the top. He is overly obnoxious. He is a detriment to the product. He actually makes the shows worse. Your announcer is not supposed to make the shows worse. Your announcer is supposed to make the shows better or be kind of in the middle, where he kind of falls into the background. You almost don't even realize he's there. Kind of like a referee. They say that The telltale sign of a great referee in a wrestling match is when you don't even realize that they're there. They don't get in the way. They don't mess things up. They don't botch this or botch that. When you almost forget that they're there, they're doing their job. And I think in a way, the announcer can make things better, but if they just kind of fall into the background, they do their job, you don't even realize that they're there, you just kind of enjoy the show, that's the sign of a good announcer. Michael Cole is not a good announcer. And maybe Vince McMahon is to blame, maybe, again, all of this is not Cole's fault and he's only doing it because he's told. Maybe part of it is his fault. Maybe he's just that good at his job, and his job is being obnoxious, and God knows, he's pretty fucking obnoxious. Why you would want to pay $15 extra? I mean, one of the luxuries of going to a live event these days is that you don't have to listen to Michael Cole. You mean to tell me now I have to pay $15 extra just to listen to him, and I'm at the show? Why in God's name would I do that? This seems completely counterintuitive to everything. In this situation, why would anybody want to spend extra money to listen to Michael Cole? Some people don't even buy pay-per-views because of him. You want to spend $15 extra just to get his commentary? Get the hell out of here. I want to thank everybody again who got me to and over the 1,000 friend limit on Facebook. We have far exceeded 1,000 friends. We're approaching 1,100 very quickly. So I want to thank everybody for that again. If you're not on Facebook, get on there right now. Facebook.com/TheSolemnMonster. One of our Facebook friends and fond listeners to the show, Kevin Clinton, had a request. I figured I would honor it here. It's SummerSlam weekend. He said that his girlfriend's birthday was this past Wednesday. His girlfriend's name is Courtney, and he wanted to give her a very public birthday shout-out here on the Sound Off, so that's exactly what I'm doing. Happy birthday to Courtney, and you can thank your boyfriend Kevin for putting that request in. And Kevin has been a member of the Triple Threat since day one, so I appreciate that. One of my loyal members of the Triple Threat, I figured, let me honor his request. So happy birthday to Courtney. Thanks to Kevin for writing in. Let's get to your questions now. Bust out the mailbag. Gary Schrader, your email account has seemingly been hacked. I've gotten a couple of spam emails from you, so you might want to check that out. Maybe change your password, get that fixed up. Kieran writes into the Sound Off. Love the show. Just wanted to ask, I know you don't really pay much attention to this season of NXT. Nope, correction, I don't pay any attention to this season of NXT. Anyway, Kieran says, I just wondered if you've managed to catch William Regal on commentary, had any thoughts, because I think he's coming along very well. He's funny, tells stories of past and present superstars, and also manages to call moves that superstars do. Also, as a bonus, his voice is so much easier on the ears than Booker T and Michael Cole. Just wondered if you had any thoughts on him and could give your opinion. Like I said, I have not checked out any of NXT of the latest season. I have of past seasons, but this season, just no interest at all. And they don't even promote it. I mean, if they ran a commercial or something on TV and said, hey, go to WWE.com and watch NXT, you know, maybe I'd remember to check it out every now and then, but they don't even give a shit about their own show. I saw Regal early on, and he was very tentative, but it was within his first two shows. That was the extent to which I saw Regal on NXT. I've heard people say that he has gotten better, and I completely believe it. Regal is awesome. He's a great promo guy. He's a great wrestler. He has a mind for the business. He's been doing this for well over 20 years. A lot of people have a lot of respect for William Regal, myself included. And I'm sure he has gotten a lot better. And that's kind of the sad story about it, is that here I just ranted on the announcers and how fucking terrible Michael Cole and Booker T are. Josh Matthews is actually fine, but he's made so much worse by having to work with those two guys on SmackDown. Whereas when he worked with Lawler, for example, on Raw, I thought Matthews was actually pretty good. And I'm not even saying Jerry Lawler is as great as he used to be. Lawler is fine, but he's a puppet. You know, he'll say whatever they want him to say. And sometimes it's really over the top. He just has a really cheesy way of delivering things. Then you know that Lawler absolutely does not believe what he's saying. He's just doing his job. Lawler used to be so much better, but he's not terrible. And when Matthews used to work with him on Raw for all those weeks, I thought he was pretty good. And the fact that Matthews now is working consistently every week with Cole and Booker T and seems to be doing worse speaks volumes about the people around him. Regal, who apparently is doing very well, is relegated to NXT duty on the website. Something has to be done about that. Matt sent in a question that I've answered directly, but it's a pretty good question that I think is worth mentioning here on the show. In your last episode of The Sound Off, you mentioned Rick Rude. and it brought back a memory. I'm not sure if you've ever watched the WWE Bret Hart DVD, which I have, but there's a segment in there, a bonus feature, where he laments the loss of former colleagues. When he mentions Rick Rude by name, he gets choked up and says something to the effect that he'll never forget what Rick did for him, but offers no further explanation. Do you have any idea what Bret is referring to here? Also, did Bret Hart and Rick Rude ever feud? If so, how would you rate their matches? Well, as I mentioned to Matt, unfortunately, Rick Rude and Bret Hart never had a chance to feud. When Rude really hit it big and he was the Intercontinental Champion and getting a run for the WWF title in 89-90 against the Warrior, Bret was still part of the Hart Foundation tag team. And when Bret finally broke out of the pack as a singles guy late in 91, Rude was already gone by that point. And same thing in WCW. Their paths always seem to just miss one another. Now, they did have one match. It's the only match on record that they had. It was a house show match in Italy back in 1989. And it doesn't appear that that match was recorded. So essentially, they had one match that only the people in the building that night saw. And it's a shame because they were both great workers. And I think a Bret Hart-Rick Rude feud actually would have been pretty cool, quite frankly. Now, as far as what Bret's referring to on the DVD, it goes back to Montreal in 97. Rick Rude was present backstage in the dressing room when Vince McMahon and his merry band of suits came in to confront Bret Hart. Bret, of course, tells the story. He told Vince he didn't want to talk to him. Get out of my locker room. I'm going to go take a shower. If you're still here when I get out, I'm going to knock you out. Of course, Bret went. He took a shower, came out. Vince was still there. And we all know all hell broke loose shortly thereafter. Rude stayed in the locker room throughout the entire incident. He did not leave, even when certain people were asked to leave. He stayed there. He stayed there to watch Bret's back and to make sure that he witnessed the entire incident as it unfolded. And the reason this was so important to Bret Hart is because a lot of people in WCW could have heard about what happened at Montreal and thought that it was a work. You know, they could think that it was all just a setup. And here comes Bret Hart, the WWF guy, coming in and, you know, claiming to hate Vince McMahon's guts when in actuality maybe he's still doing some subversive work for Vince and trying to infiltrate WCW. Maybe we can't trust this guy. And Rick Rude made a phone call. He made a phone call to Eric Bischoff and told Bischoff it was not a work. He was very adamant to Bischoff. He was there. He saw the whole thing. It was a shoot. It was real. There was nothing fake about it. You can trust Bret. Everything that happened that they talked about on television, on the dirt sheets, it happened just that way. And Bret was always very appreciative of that because, again, he could have come into he came into WCW and had other issues. And there were other political forces that conspired against him. And WCW bungled, for the most part, bungled his push from the word go. But it didn't have anything to do with any lack of trustworthiness on his part. And that was in large part because Rick Rude was there to back him up on that. And also because I think Rick stayed in the locker room to watch his back, physically watch his back. So Bret was very, very appreciative of that. And he took Rick Rude's death, I believe Rude died in 99. And he took his death very, very hard. Brian in upstate New York, with Shawn Michaels essentially having two careers, kind of like a BCAD type of situation, and rightfully going into the Hall of Fame, my question is, since the better half of his career was 2002 to 2010, do you feel his second career was Hall of Fame worthy on its own? Some people would actually debate your point that the second half of his career was better than the first. I'm not saying I'm one of them. In many ways, the second half of his career is so much more impressive than the first half, it's not even funny. Just because everybody counted him out. I mean, everybody was led to believe that he had this debilitating back injury, would never be able to wrestle again. Perhaps one day he can have one last match. And he came back for what was supposed to be one match, and then it became another, and another, and another, and then he was back full time. And 8 years later, he finally retired. And nobody expected that. Shawn didn't expect that. Vince didn't expect that. I didn't expect that. And to see Shawn have the kind of matches that he had, and I'm talking five-star level matches here, for those of you who love star ratings. The match he had with Kurt Angle at WrestleMania. The matches he had with John Cena, both at WrestleMania and the UK match on Raw a couple of weeks later. You know, the emotional retirement match with Ric Flair. The matches with The Undertaker, including WrestleMania 25, which to me is still the best of the best. the matches, quite frankly, he had with just about everybody he was in the ring with, except the Great Khali, but you can't blame Shawn for that, is nothing short of amazing. And again, not only was Shawn, this was after the back surgery, but he was older. You know, he was an older man. I mean, a lot of those matches took place when Shawn was in his early to mid-40s, you know? He was still doing amazing things in the ring. He was still doing the kip-ups. He was still doing the elbow drops. But his body was a lot older than it was when he did all the things he did and had all those amazing matches in the first half of his career. And I'm not discounting the first half of his career, the ladder matches with Razor Ramon and all the first matches he had with Bret Hart and Owen Hart and Davey Boy and Mankind and even the early matches with The Undertaker, quite frankly, which were also phenomenal, including the very first Hell in a Cell, the Iron Man match. I mean, Shawn Michaels is truly, you know, people throw the word amazing and historic and the greatest of all time and all of these tags around. You can definitely make the argument that Shawn is the best of all time when it comes to WWE because he essentially had two completely distinct careers. You know, the matches he had, the attitude he had the first time around compared to his attitude the second time around. Is Shawn's second half of his career, or second career, if you want to call it that, Hall of Fame worthy on its own? You bet your ass it is. Absolutely. If you erased every single thing that Shawn Michaels did from the moment he debuted in 1988 in WWF until his last match in 1998, if it never happened, and here comes this guy in 2002, if you take his body of work from 02 to 2010... Not only is he Hall of Fame worthy, but as they referred to him, I think, at the ceremony, he's still first ballot Hall of Fame worthy. I don't even think there could be any debate about that question at all. Got a letter here from Fernando. It's been a while since you've mentioned mixed martial arts on your great podcast, so I have a few MMA questions and comments for you. First, when did you first get into MMA, and do you follow it as much as you do for wrestling, or are you more of a casual fan? Also, do you believe that more wrestling fans should migrate to viewing MMA? I am more of a casual fan. I do not follow UFC or MMA in general as closely as I do wrestling. I'll always be a diehard wrestling fan more than just about anything else. I mean, I'm a baseball fan. I'm kind of a sports fan, but I'll always be a wrestling fan first and foremost. MMA is something that I will catch on occasion. I don't order a lot of the pay-per-views. I might get one or two pay-per-views per year if I can chip in with somebody. It's not something I go out of my way to watch every single show. I'm aware of a lot of the fighters, who they are. Do I know all of the different practices that, you know, oh, this guy is good in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, this guy's more of a wrestler? I probably am not the most knowledgeable person when it comes to knowing that about individual fighters. But do I know who the fighters are? Generally speaking, yes. Do I know when the big matchups are and what the big feuds are and all that? Yes, I do. Do I believe that more wrestling fans should migrate to viewing MMA? I think wrestling fans should do and watch whatever makes them happy. If wrestling fans are disgruntled with the product, then they should watch something that doesn't make them so angry. Nobody should walk around angry about what they watch on television. The whole point of watching television is that you watch what you find to be entertaining. You watch whatever makes you happy, whatever brings you joy, makes you laugh, makes you cry, whatever emotion you're going for. You know, if you like comedies, go watch a sitcom. If you like movies, go watch HBO. If you like wrestling, put USA on. Don't put Spike on, because that'll make you rip your fucking hair out of your head. But I think wrestling fans should do whatever makes them happy. If they want to watch MMA, hey, there's room for both. Why can't you watch both? Why does there have to be a loyalty to one or the other? It's kind of that. I go back to the days of WWE and WCW during the Monday Night Wars. I look back at that and I laugh, because I was always a diehard WWF guy. And my friend, who was also a WWF guy, would take up for defending WCW. You know, every Tuesday we'd walk home from, you know, school or whatever, and we would have these arguments. I mean, we really heated arguments, because I would talk about how great Raw was, and he would say, well, Nitro won the ratings again, and I'd say, well, who gives a shit? The people are idiots. You know, the ratings don't mean anything. It doesn't reflect the quality of the shows. Raw was so much better. And, you know, half the time I was right. That was one of the more frustrating things to the WWF guys at the time. They felt they were doing better shows, but they kept losing. And, of course, half the time I was probably talking out of my ass. You know, Raw probably had a couple of jobber matches that were boring as fuck. which I can back that up because they are currently airing episodes of the Monday Night Wars on their Classics on Demand channel. And some of these Raw episodes are just... I mean, right now they're up to the... they're kind of up to the Attitude Era now, but my God, before that, some of those episodes were just insufferable. But anyway, I just look back on that and I laugh because we were both so passionate. I was more passionate than he was about, you know, you gotta be loyal to one over the other. You can't... How can you be a WCW fan if you're a WWF guy? You know, it was like a war. I mean, it was really like a personal vendetta. But you don't have to show allegiance to one or the other. You can watch both. You know, there's room to have harmony for both. Now Fernando makes another point in his email here. It's a little long. I'm not going to get into it. But, you know, he mentions the fact that WWE does not consider MMA to be competition. They do not consider UFC to be competition. And I can tell you that that's bullshit. I can tell you that that's bullshit. And there's been more than a few reports from people inside WWE that say they absolutely monitor everything that UFC does. I mean, they have, I think, weekly or bi-weekly reports. And just like TNA, UFC is in there as well. They're listed in those reports. They definitely monitor UFC. Why? Because they consider them competition. Publicly, they're not going to say that because they're getting their ass kicked on pay-per-view by them. But in reality, behind the scenes, do they consider UFC to be competition? You bet your ass they do. Pay no attention to what they say in public or at these investor conference calls and these quarterly earnings reports meetings and all this with the stockholders. They're talking out of the side of their mouth when it comes to that. Believe me, they consider them to be competition. In fact, they're actually trying to work with UFC now to try to find out ahead of time what dates the UFC will be running on pay-per-view so they can avoid running the same weekend. Because they recognize that on those weekends when there's a big UFC... Let's say there was a UFC pay-per-view last night, and then tonight you have SummerSlam. It depends on the main event. If UFC has a compelling enough main event, that's bad news for WWE. That Survivor Series show 2 years ago, or whatever it was, when Survivor Series did so horrible that Vince McMahon decided to abolish the entire pay-per-view concept before he was talked into bringing it back. The reason that happened, in large part, if I remember correctly, that was the year that UFC ran on the same weekend. Might have actually been a Brock Lesnar fight. I could have my timetable wrong here, but the point is, it took a big bite out of that pay-per-view buy rate. I mean, who knows how Survivor Series would have done without UFC? Probably not that much better, but it definitely took some buys away from WWE. I mean, it could very well have, directly or indirectly, depending on how you look at it, caused the demise of Survivor Series. I'd say that's pretty significant. That's not something you can just ignore. So when WWE says that, just... understand, if it sounds ridiculous, it is ridiculous. Behind the scenes, they're not that stupid. They don't honestly believe that. They are competition. Rude Boy writes in, love the show. Thanks for the bonus weekday show. I never thought I would see the day where I would see a diva jobber, let alone two of them, but it seems that the day has come with the arrival of AJ and Caitlin. Can you remember a diva seriously jobbing every week ever? Yes, her name was Melina. How quickly we forget. Take two more here. Jason writes in, one of my favorite wrestlers of all time is Shelton Benjamin, a really great athlete. What is the possibility of him ever coming back to WWE, and what is your opinion of him? I think I've talked about Shelton before. He's a tremendous athlete. WWE let him go because they felt personality-wise he just wasn't advancing as quickly as they would have liked. Could he come back? Absolutely. He actually wrestled a dark match for them a couple of months ago. Some people thought that they would have signed him by now. I believe since that time, he and Charlie Haas have signed contracts with Sinclair for Ring of Honor, which if that's the case, then they're locked in there for probably a little while. So I would suspect that Shelton is going to be staying put in ROH and not coming back to WWE. But could I see him back there one day? Absolutely. When he took that dark match, that told me right there he would be open to coming back at some point. And last question here from Alex. I've been listening since episode 144 to the Sound Off. I'm a loyal member of the Triple Threat. That, of course, by the way, for those of you who don't know, is Twitter, Facebook, and iTunes. Anyway, says my question to you is, what did you think about the work of Andrew Test Martin? I thought he was one of the better big men in WWE history, or at least of the past 15 years. He was not awful on the microphone, and his run in 2001 was very successful. It included an Intercontinental title run, a tag team title, and a WCW tag title run, both being with Booker T. If he would not have had spinal fusion surgery in 2004, do you believe he would have been a world champion at some point, considering Vince has a, quote, hard-on for big men? And what did you think of his in-ring work? I always thought that they really dropped the ball with him in 99. You know, when he was with Stephanie McMahon and they did that whole storyline where they were in a relationship and he proposed to her, and it was so cheesy, but it was so well done. And it built to that love her or leave her match where Shane McMahon was going to fight for her honor and try to beat Test's ass at SummerSlam. And that might have been one of the early matches that Shane McMahon had before he started wrestling a little more regularly. And it was the first really big singles match on pay-per-view that Test had. And I just remember, a lot of things about SummerSlam 99. I remember the very abrupt ending to the main event with Jesse Ventura as the referee when Mankind pinned Steve Austin, when a lot of people expected Triple H to be the one to do it. I just remember how that match just kind of ended out of nowhere. I remember The Rock shoving Billy Gunn's face up that large woman's ass. Credit to Jim Ross for that quote. I remember there being a pretty good tag team turmoil match, but the biggest thing I remember about that SummerSlam in 99, as we reflect here on SummerSlam weekend, was how fucking awesome that Test Shane McMahon match was. That, to me, stole the show. That was the best match of that pay-per-view. And who would have thunk it? Who would have thunk that Shane McMahon would have the best match on the pay-per-view? But it takes two to tango. Test held up his end of the bargain in that match. The crowd was into it. The storyline was great. Test went over. The place went nuts. You know, he embraced Stephanie after the match. This guy was on the fast track to big things. And then it seemingly never happened. He hit a wall. I don't know why. I don't remember him being in the doghouse for any reason. Perhaps there were, again, political forces at play, and they were intimidated by his quick rise up the ranks. I don't know. Of course, Triple H ended up, crashing their wedding, and he ended up marrying Stephanie. And you would think that at that point, there's a ready-made feud there for Triple H and Test, and I'm sure they must have had a match, but there was never a feud. There was never a big pay-per-view match. It just kind of went nowhere. It's one of those storylines that was truly botched by the company. They could have made a real, true, bona fide main event star in Test way back in 99, and they dropped the ball. And to me, he was never the same after that. Yes, he had some success in 01. I think that was the year he won the Immunity Battle Royal at Survivor Series, which is ironic because it wasn't very long after that that he got fired. Or maybe it was. I don't remember. Actually, I don't remember if he was fired first and then came back, or if he wasn't fired until years later when he was recovering from spinal fusion surgery. Either way, it's ironic that he won an Immunity Battle Royal but eventually got fired anyway. He won a couple of championships. I think he was European champion in there as well at some point. Had the surgery. Eventually they brought him back. Remember, he was on ECW. He was mocked. I mean, mercilessly mocked. They chanted steroid at him. He looked all jacked up. It was a shame. It really was a shame. He got all jacked up on whatever he was taking. He was never physically in the ring to me. He was never the same. His ECW push was short-lived. He was gone after that. He had issues to the point where even TNA, they entertained the idea of bringing him in. They might have even given him a dark match. And they actually opted against bringing him in, which speaks volumes. Because back then, even more so than now, back then, Test had a name in WWE. And if TNA wouldn't even touch the guy, there were issues there. And his story obviously had a very sad ending. And who knows how things might have been different if he would have been pushed properly. You know, you could say, well, he was pushed more than he deserved. He wasn't that good. He was still green. He was doing just fine. And I look back at that SummerSlam match. To me, that was the pinnacle of his career, in my opinion. You know, he's wrestled at WrestleMania before he had a European title match with Eddie Guerrero at WrestleMania in 01, which I'm sure to him was a very big deal. But to me, that was the time to strike, was in 99. He had all the momentum in the world. He's about to marry the boss's daughter. There's so many things you could have done. Even if you would have gone with Triple H, again, feud, Test, and Triple H. You know, you've got a built-in issue there about Stephanie, but they decided to go in a different direction, and, you know, the rest is history. So, that's going to do it for the mailbag here, episode 173. As always, you can send in your questions to me at thesolemonster@gmail.com. Don't forget to put the word the. Don't just send it to Solemonster, because it'll go somewhere other than myself. TheSolomonster at gmail.com is the email address. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Solomonster, as we approach 1,000 followers on Twitter. And we've already surpassed 1,000 friends on Facebook, facebook.com/TheSolomonster. I'm sure there'll be a good thread going tonight for the SummerSlam pay-per-view. There is every Monday night during Raw. A lot of great discussion on there, funny links. I'll post pictures every now and then that are exclusive to Facebook. You'll want to get on there and friend me. It's the only way to see that good stuff. So get on there if you're not already on there. And iTunes, you can subscribe. Solomonster Sounds Off. Punch that in. Subscribe. It's free. Doesn't cost you anything. And every now and then when I post a special rare weekday edition of the Sound Off that perhaps you don't visit SE Scoops every single day, you don't even know it's there, if you were an iTunes subscriber, you'd automatically have the show downloaded for you. And again, if you missed episode 172, a lot of good stuff in there. Go back, check it out. You know, one thing I just forgot, I had meant to mention this earlier on the episode. I checked out part of SmackDown this week, and two things I saw. I saw the Cody Rhodes-Ezekiel Jackson match for the Intercontinental Championship. Cody beat Zeke, became the champion, so it's nice to see him, as I mentioned on the last show, following in his brother Goldust's footsteps. The match was fine. The biggest thing to me was how quickly the star has fallen for Big Zeke. You know, Big Zeke, big jacked-up guy right up Vince McMahon's alley. He got the big push. I don't remember Zeke getting really any big wins over anybody except maybe Wade Barrett. You know, he's one of the – he may go down as one of the worst or most uneventful Intercontinental Champions in WWE history, at least with Cody. Cody's actually getting a push. You know, he's got the stupid paper bag gimmick. He's got DiBiase as his lackey. At least they're doing something with him, so it actually makes perfect sense to put the title on him. So I think that's cool. And then Randy Orton and the Great Khali. I heard that this was the main event, and I said, I have to see this. I just have to see Great Khali and Randy Orton. How is this going to be? And they kept it short. There was a nerve hold in there by Khali at one point, the traditional Samoan nerve hold, even though he's not Samoan. The match was fine, and actually the RKO that Orton gave him at the end of the match to beat Khali was fine. Khali took it like a champ. I figured, you know, he would take it and fall on his knees or something, but no. Khali took the hold like a champ, 1-2-3, just like that. Orton looked strong going into his championship match with Christian at SummerSlam. That's the way you do it. You want your championship challenger to look strong going into the pay-per-view. And like I said, I don't know what Christian's got up his sleeve at SummerSlam tonight, but even if they don't do it tonight, I think putting Brodus Clay with Christian has always worked a lot better, I think, when he has somebody to play off of. You know, whether it was Edge back when they were tag team partners, when he had Tomko as his bodyguard in WWE and later on also in TNA, Christian was great. I mean, when Christian was backstage at the Royal Rumble that year and he said, Tomko, give me a beat, and Tomko just stood there and stared at him and said, no, I'm not going to give you a beat. Come on. Christian works so much better when he's got somebody to play off of. So why not take a guy like Brodus Clay and pair him off with Christian? So I guess we'll see what they got up their sleeve soon enough. Enjoy SummerSlam if you're watching it tonight. And until next time, be well, stay safe. We'll see you right back here next week for 174. Take it easy, guys.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joe from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solomonster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com.